The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene, has essentially said that she is ready to throw down with any dude that she runs into in the women's facilities. Now, if you don't know Marjorie Taylor Greene, she is a CrossFit aficionado that just loves to lift heavy. And I mean, the chick is, she's pretty fit. Okay.
Yeah. So, and I mean, I wouldn't mess with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Like, no. she's a little cray cray. Like, I think that she would.
I wouldn't put it past her. I think
that our country is right now in the most dangerous position it's ever been.
Confident that there will be a peaceful transfer of power in January 2025.
If Trump wins, no, I'm not comfortable.
Take a look at what happened.
You're considered the most liberal United States senator.
Somebody said that.
Campaign rally is not a press conference. Why hasn't she had a press conference? She's the vice president. She can handle the questions. Why not do it?
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed.
4 months from now, we will have an incredible victory, and we will begin the four greatest years in the history of our country.
Hey, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Campaign Games, the game of survival for both the candidates and the voters. I'm Miss Sadie, and I'm here with my friend, Rachel. Rachel, are you doing okay?
The baby was up last night a lot with the fever, so no. As you can see, thank goodness this is not a video podcast.
I don't know. Look, I'm going to break it to our listeners because they'll be like, oh, you guys will ever do video? I don't know if that'll ever happen.
Not unless you find, like me, a built-in nanny, a night nurse who can be up in the middle of the night with sick kids. No.
It's like, I don't see that in our future.
No,
but
I don't.
What is in our future for today's episode is we're going to be talking about the drama on the Hill with Nancy Mace. Okay, I kind of forgot her name for a second. Nancy Mace and an incoming Congress person.
Man.
I'm Sarah
just gonna
McBride.
Rip off the band-aid right from the beginning. I'm not going to mess around.
And we're also going to be talking about Trump's reality TV picks in the cabinet, which I guess is what I'm calling it. But I'm also doing, that's a little tongue-in-cheek. We're going to go into that. And a little update on the Lincoln Riley trial that is going on in Georgia. And I don't know if you guys are aware that that trial has been going on for about a week now. So we're going to touch on those. That's our goal. Those are our three things, right?
We can do it.
We can do it. We can be efficient. We're going to get this done, okay? But before we do that, we're going to jump in and you're going to go ahead and wait. What did I say? Before we jump in, you're going to go ahead. I wasn't up with a kid. I don't know what's wrong with me. You're going to go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating because you're going to love us anyway. So you might as well just do it right now. And since we are your new favorite podcast, you're going to leave us a lovely note and review. And then we'll share it because I love to share it on our socials. So
yes, we'll love you forever.
Yes. Yeah. It's a quid quo. What? I can't even speak it.
Quid pro quo. Wow. We are not bringing our best this morning.
Oh my gosh. It's 6:30
we will
in
improve.
The morning.
It's okay. Yeah. We'll improve.
We need a little warm up, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about Nancy Mace, Sarah McBride, which is Stu's name, and what is going on there. So Sarah McBride is, I'm going to be using news language now. So when you guys see the news reports, you understand what's going on. Okay. Sarah McBride is the first openly trans woman, is what they will say, who has won a congressional seat for the state of Delaware. And they are due to be sworn in. And Nancy Mace has introduced a resolution to restrict access to Capitol restrooms and other single-sex facilities, because you also have to understand that the Capitol also has locker rooms. They have like gym facilities. It's not just the potty. You know what I mean? It's also locker rooms.
Multiple different facilities that,
there's,
that he might use.
Yeah. And they are based on biological sex. And so she has introduced a resolution that would restrict, arguably, McBride's access to these spaces. Now, she's getting a bunch of backlash for it. There's been a lot of discussion. There's a lot of talking points. Of course, the talking points from the left is like, see, while we have all these issues with the economy and Medicare and, you know, health insurance, and this is what they're concerned about. Well, I think they probably lost the plot on like one of the issues that was kind of big during this election.
Yeah. Still zero reflection.
Yeah. Zero acknowledgement or understanding of what was one of the concerns.
Yeah.
Especially in these swing states, this election.
Yeah.
So that is what's going on there. So initially what happened was Mace made the introduction of the resolution. Johnson was asked about it, and he had like a, I don't know, how would you describe his first, his original response? Like
post. He completely dodged a question. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see the evolution of kind of what happened yesterday afternoon, because he was asked pretty quickly. I mean, Nancy Mace has given really like firm answers about this, unequivocal. She's not messing around. She's like, yeah, I'm not going to do this. It's a man. He should not be in female restrooms. This is not difficult. You can call me anything you want. And so then in a presser yesterday, Speaker Johnson was asked, do you believe McBride is a man or a woman? And he went, okay, look, we're not going to, I'm not going to answer that. Just everybody needs to be treated with dignity and respect. I'm just not going to answer that. This is a discussion about facilities, and we're going to treat everybody with respect. Moving on. And so I was like, nope, absolutely not. That's, you know, it's not good enough. and then by the several hours later, I was cooking dinner, and another clarification from Johnson came out. He went into, I don't know where he, I mean, he was on the Hill, but I don't know what exactly he was doing. But he came out and made a specific reference to his previous statement.
Hello, everybody. I just want to make a statement for all of you here and be very clear. I was asked a question this morning at the leadership gaggle, and I rejected the premise because the answer is so obvious. For anybody who doesn't know my well-established record on this issue, let me be unequivocally clear. A man is a man, and a woman is a woman, and a man cannot become a woman. That said, I also believe, that's what Scripture teaches, what I just said, but I also believe that we treat everybody with dignity. And so we can do and believe all those things at the same time. And I wanted to make that clear for everybody, because there's lots of questions. But that's where I stand. I've stood there my whole life, and those are facts.
And so that's where we stand right now.
So then those were his comments. Mace was, I guess, caught outside of the Hill by an ABC reporter. Mm-hmm. And she doubled down.
Yep.
You know, rightfully so.
Here she goes. Here's Congresswoman Mace. Congresswoman Mace, can I ask you a question as you walk here? Mm-hmm. So the question is, with your piece of legislation about banning women from using...
100% yes.
My question to you is...
And it doesn't go far enough. I'll be filing more bills.
You have said that it was created in response to Congresswoman-elect McBride.
100%. And
but should legislation be created targeted at one specific person?
It doesn't mention anyone in the legislation, but
I... But you've said it was aimed at her.
No, I have said it's a result of this. I'm not going to allow biological men into women's private spaces. I will stand in the brink and stand in the way of anyone on the radical left who thinks that it's okay for a penis to be in a women's locker room or a bathroom or a changing room. Hell no. I'm not going to stand for it. And the speaker said it would be in the House rules package. If it's not, I'll be ready with a motion, a privileged motion, to force a vote on this. This is not okay. I'm a survivor of rape. I'm a survivor of sexual abuse. And I'm not going to allow any man in any female private spaces.
Now, Speaker.
End of story. And by the way, I'm getting death threats from men pretending to be women. Why is it that these crazy people, the insanity, the radical left, are willing to kill women over a man's right to be in a women's restroom?
Speaker Johnson has said he wants to treat every new member with the words dignity and respect.
Well,
forcing this congressperson to go into a male restroom, is that dignity and respect?
forcing women to share private spaces with men is not dignity and not respect. And I'm absolutely going to stand in the way of anyone who thinks it's okay for a man to be in our locker room, in our changing rooms, in our dressing rooms, in women's bathrooms. And in fact, if you agree with that, you're crazy, because that's not okay. It's not okay.
And then McBride, at one point, I don't know exactly where in the timeline, put out a statement on X. And it is, everyday Americans go to work with people who have life journeys different than their own and engage in them respectfully. I hope members of Congress can muster the same kindness. And then follows up with, this is a blatant attempt from the far right extremists to distract from the fact that they have no real solutions to what Americans are facing. We should be focused on bringing down the cost of housing, healthcare, childcare, not manufacturing culture wars. Delawareans sent me here to make the American dream more affordable and accessible. And that's what I'm focused on. And that's kind of where we finished. Now, there was a news report out of Breitbart that Johnson has privately committed to back the effort led by Nancy Mace to block biological men from using women's restrooms in the U.S. Capitol. So that's the drama on the Hill.
Yeah.
Well, oh, wait. There's one more, because this one's really good. Okay.
Yeah.
Punchbowl News, who is basically a news outlet that is embedded up on the Hill. They're also reporting, I can't, that MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene, has essentially said that she is ready to throw down with any dude that she runs into in the women's facilities. Now, if you don't know Marjorie Taylor Greene, she is a CrossFit aficionado that just loves to lift heavy. And I mean, the chick is, she's pretty fit. Okay.
Yeah. So, and I mean, she is, I wouldn't mess with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Oh, like she's a little cray cray. Like, I think that she would,
I wouldn't put it past her. Do I think that's particularly productive? Not necessarily, no, but I just need to throw that out there also. So that is the drama that is surrounding what is up on the Hill right now.
Yeah.
So I am going to say this, and I think actually specifically in regards to McBride's statement on X, Ali Stuckey replied to them and had a really good point. And I would one that I completely agree with. McBride's initial statement points out, hey, everyday Americans don't agree on things. They see things differently. And they still engage with each other respectfully. Mm-hmm. And Stuckey points out that which is one of the things that really irritates me about this entire movement. It's weaponizing empathy. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to feel bad for this person. You're supposed to use emotions to dismiss reality and make it seem like this is something that we should just all be okay with, without acknowledging the wave of ramifications that it has on not just people like directly on the Hill, but just within our society. And, and I think that the fact, it's because you can be like, oh, but they're just like, it's their workplace. And where do you expect them to go to use the bathroom and all? And I can totally understand the knee jerk reaction to maybe think like, well, this person's in Congress and maybe they're not, you know, they're, because not every person who is transgender is automatically predatorial. No, they seem to go that way a little bit more than I would be comfortable with, but it's not a zero sum game. But that doesn't mean that we should uproot reality,
right,
for and weaponize empathy in order for this person or for any person to just change the objectionably true function and standards within our society.
Of course.
Am I making any sense there?
Yeah, you're making complete sense, because it's really not a difficult argument. So I have lots of thoughts on this, but the first one that came to my mind right now is it's kind of like the wheel of reality actually occurring to people. So for a long time, we were told with the trans issue, it's not happening. Then when people started seeing it pop up kind of everywhere in their communities, in their kids' sports, in the gym, in their, you know, neighborhood, in private spaces that they might use that they never thought it would happen, on Capitol Hill. It's kind of happening everywhere. So it goes from it's not happening to how dare you notice, because people started asking questions and pushing back and going, this isn't right. To then it's not happening. How dare you notice it's happening? Then we get to the point in the timeline where it's like, yes, it is happening. And then you move to the it's good that it's happening. And this rotation continues to happen to all of us. And when you get to the point where we're at now, which is it's happening and it's good, it's all people can start seeing how manipulative it is, because that's really all it is. It weaponizing empathy, especially for people like Christians who at the base level have a sense of justice. They have a sense of they want to be compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
Their knee-jerk reaction is to default to, for a lot of people, not all, but is to care and not want to hurt people's feelings. It's manipulative. And instead of looking at it, looking at reality and seeing what exactly is happening, we'll dismiss it out of hand. And now what I'm watching, which is actually really interesting, is a lot of ex-liberals or people who don't feel like the Liberal Party identifies with them anymore because of the trans issue, because they went so far left field. People got really upset with like Iman Khalif at the Olympics, or Leah Thomas, or there's a host of other situations where this is happening, and they're getting so mad about it, rightfully so, because it's mm-hmm. ridiculous. But then when you boil it down and these small incidences come up and happen, they'll still go, well, okay, we don't need to make that huge of a deal about it. Look at these crazy extremist Republicans wanting their own bathrooms. And what people fail to see is this is why Iman Khalif happens. This is why Leah Thomas happens and is allowed to happen, because, like I said on Instagram yesterday, capitulation at the really small level, which this isn't small, but the reason it's here now and it's happening and Speaker Johnson, the Speaker of the House, is having to address this publicly for America is because people, I think a lot of people with, you know, good motives, they capitulated and ignored these things or let people do whatever they wanted and run roughshod over reality. Well, now look at where we're at. And so we need to turn it. Free thinkers and people who just observe reality need to be able to turn this on its head for people. When they say it's you're not being kind, you're not being compassionate or showing people dignity or respect if you don't let them use the restroom they want or refer to them with a pronoun that they want. We have to be able to say, excuse me, lying to people is not kind. And what about the dignity and respect of the women who you are going to be making insanely uncomfortable by allowing men in their spaces? Because it's a very backwards manipulative movement. And I want the people who are now outraged with some of these more high profile trans occurrences to get upset about the small minutiae and start seeing like it happens everywhere. If we allow it there, this is what it becomes. Like you said, they're not looking at the ramifications down the road.
And there's a ripple effect.
There's a ripple effect. And that's why it was nice what Speaker Johnson said. The clarification he came out and said, I appreciate that. A man is a man, a woman's a woman, and a man cannot become a man. Very good. We need a lot of people saying that out there. But what I took pause with was when he said, but still, we need to treat everybody with dignity and respect. I want to know what that means, because if that means you need to be kind and respectful to someone, yes, I agree with that. We must be. We should. We're called, especially as Christians. Yes. But if his idea of what dignity and respect means is, but we're still going to let him feel comfortable in the bathroom he wants to go in, well, then no.
Well,
that's not
and
showing
I think
him dignity and respect.
There's a discussion to be had. One of the things that annoys me is like, you know, it's like his post, McBride's post about, you know, that engage with them respectfully. Mm-hmm. But just know that within that post, he's saying like, on my terms, engage
exactly.
with me respectfully on my terms.
Yes.
And as opposed to what Johnson's saying, it's like, look, you cannot agree on things. You can accept reality. I would hope, let me put it this way, what I would hope
mm-hmm.
or what I would expect to come from Johnson is that we don't have to agree on things, but we have to accept reality. I have to acknowledge that whether you like it or not, mm-hmm. the well-being and safety and the spaces of just the natural, normal world of women
yes.
is going to trump this one person.
Right.
And so we can.
And it must.
And
it
I
must.
Think it,
if
it
we're
going to
take
should.
Reality seriously, if we're going to take biology seriously, if we're going to observe what has for all of mankind until like 3 years ago been what is expected and normal and true, that men are men, women are women, and you can't just turn into one. Even if you feel like you were always meant to be, we have to be able to say those things out loud, unequivocally, and then be kind and respectful to people when you explain to them. We cannot, like you said earlier, uproot everything we've done to make you feel comfortable in your delusion. And I know those words do not sound compassionate and kind to people, but lying and allowing people to live in a lie and then impact other people around them with that lie, that's not compassionate either.
Well, I saw something the other day. Jen Psaki did a segment on her show on MSNBC, which is probably about to tank anyways. But anyways, that's another story. Because apparently MSNBC is not doing so great. Where she was talking about how Trump used this ad and like created this illusion that the trans issue in school was like a huge deal. Like it was such a big deal and it was hugely threatening. And she says, when in fact it wasn't. These are very few remote instances that have happened.
There's obviously a lot of soul searching right now going on within the Democratic Party, and that's a good thing. But what I worry about is that in the course of all that soul searching, some Democrats might reach the wrong sweeping conclusions. And there are a lot of issues that fall into that bucket. But one in particular that stuck out to me is transgender rights. Republicans spent hundreds of millions of dollars on anti-trans ads this election cycle, including one that showed Vice President Harris talking about government funding for gender reaffirming care for prisoners and detainees. If that sounds like a particularly obscure issue, it is, because it applies to a tiny group of people. And it's also a policy that, by the way, was in place during the first Trump presidency. Another one of the lines that ran over and over again in those ads and throughout right-wing media is this idea that America is faced with a crisis of boys playing in girls' sports. Now, these ads created this perception that the issues of trans kids playing sports was dominating schools across the country, which is completely false. Some people got pulled into that argument. I mean, immediately after the election, Congressman Seth Moulton told the New York Times that, quote, Democrats spend way too much time trying not to offend anyone rather than being brutally honest about the challenges many Americans face. I have two little girls. I don't want them getting run over on a playing field by a male or formerly male athlete. But as a Democrat, I'm supposed to be afraid to say that. And then last weekend, Congressman Moulton came on this network to discuss those comments.
I was just speaking authentically as a dad about one of many issues where I think we're just out of touch with the majority of voters. And I stand by my position. You know, maybe I didn't get all the words exactly right. But the point is that the backlash I've received proves my point that we can't even have these discussions as a party.
Look, reflection is good. But if that were actually an issue at thousands of schools across the country, it would be worthy of a debate. But there are just incredibly few examples of transgender girls playing in youth sports. And when we see those examples, there isn't evidence that these kids are a threat to safety or fairness.
Now, she acknowledges that they've happened, but her strategy is to tell you, but there's only a handful of them. And
yeah,
they're really
so
not
the
that
wheel,
big of a deal.
On the wheel of whatever you want to call it, disillusionment. Well, she is. Okay. Anyways, on the wheel, she is at the it's not really happening. And guarantee, give it a little time, and she will be at the, it is happening, and it's great. Because she knows it's happening, and a lot of other times I've heard her talk about, you know, trans rights are women's rights, and, you know, trans people are beautiful and wonderful, and they are a colorful segment of society, you know, so she just kind of flip-flops whatever is the most convenient, but the voters told us on election night that this was an issue. It is an issue for a lot of people because they're looking at this. They're looking at the fact that we're even spending time. I mean, hey, McBride was right. We should be spending time talking about the issues that matter to Americans. So guess what? Stop wasting time and use the mail facilities because you are a man. And I understand that that can read unkind, but I'm kind of over having to change my language, change reality for people. It's manipulative to tell someone you can't speak about things that are objectively true. And if you do say things that are objectively true, that means you're mean. we have to be able to deal in reality. We have to.
I don't know. Look, I can acknowledge that it sounds ridiculous sometimes to force someone, like if you want to be like very surface level, like mm-hmm. it sounds ridiculous to be like, you have to go and use the men's restroom, even if you feel uncomfortable. And I'm talking about McBride. I'm like speaking on like, this is their argument that they're going to make. And so in our nature, we're like, well, we don't want them to feel bad.
Right.
So,
of course.
You know, it's manipulative. We're going to let them go where they want.
Yeah.
When it's not like, fine, they make accommodations. I've never been in the Capitol or the Capitol building. I'm sure there's maybe a single stall bathroom somewhere or something like that. Mm-hmm. I get that. Yeah. But the reality is I almost feel like there are a group of, I have heard other trans individuals, especially who have transitioned, air mm-hmm. quotes, to being a woman, where they're like, look, I acknowledge I'm still a man.
Yes.
I am. And I am a trans woman. I'm not a woman. Don't tell me, you know, like women are women, and then force something that is objectively false on the entire population of people and right. make them readjust reality in order for me to feel accepted.
Yes.
Like I'm not the center of the world.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, do whatever as an adult, do whatever, like, I don't have to agree with it. Do whatever you want in the free world, but you can't force everybody else to bend the knee and capitulate to you.
Right.
And if you are making these choices, which they'll argue is not a choice, but if you're making these choices, and this is the way you've decided to live your life, there are consequences to that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be prepared that you're going to have to make some adjustments or hope that there are some forms that are available to make accommodations for you or whatever. I don't even think accommodations for you should be the issue. You know what I mean? Like, no. I just think it should be like, we got to find something that honestly, the easiest solution would be to go through therapy and just realize that
you are what you are
yes. and you need to deal with the fact that you are what you are.
Right And so, I don't think this is it's sad that we are even couching that you are having to explain yourself, because again, if we zoom out and really look at what we're talking about right now, we are talking about a man who wants to pretend he's a woman.
Yes.
And wants everybody else to pretend he is a woman. And when you say that out loud and you kind of can brush away the fact that this has become the new reality in 2024, that we're even having to deal with this, it is absolutely insane that we have to spend time thinking and talking about this. But we live in such a fallen world where this is where we're at now. Men want to be women. Women want to be men. And the rest of us have to learn how to reckon with it. But that's why, this is exactly why, Speaker Johnson and other people dealing with this, the parents of the girls who are having to compete against these men, and people in, you know, grade school that are having boys want to play in girls' sports and girls play in boys' sports, which doesn't happen as often. They need to be able to come out from the jump and say, no, this is not real. I deal in reality. This is not reality. I am sorry that this is the reality you are dealing with, but the solution is not to force all of us to have to rewire reality for you. I'm sorry, but that is the truth. And
Speaker Johnson
needs to stick with this, and he needs to define what dignity and compassion mean, not only for McBride, but for all of the women, all of them.
Let me just say that I get really ticked off by other women who weaponize empathy against like women like Nancy Mace.
Yeah.
And make
full
them
disclosure,
feel.
You and I have not loved everything that Nancy Mace
no,
has done.
I'm not,
so
I am actually not a huge fan of hers, like right. for and multiple reasons.
But I was listening to her statement yesterday. And I was like, yep.
And
yep.
she's not wrong.
No.
And I also like there are also I've seen a few things. It's like, well, she could be a little look. There are certain things. I am so sick and tired of people being told that they have to be kinder or they have mm-hmm. to deliver. There are certain messages that I don't feel like I have to be nice about. All right.
Right.
I just don't feel like I have to be nice about them.
You don't. And again, zoom out. Zoom out even 5 years ago. if someone would have told me, hey, by the way, your daughter is going to be 17 and going to a gym in your county, and there was a man arrested in there last year going into the women's locker room because he thinks he is a woman, but you need to be nice to him. I would have been like, what? No, I don't have to be nice to him. I'm sorry. That's not a requirement when you're dealing with things that are so sensitive, things that are cut and dry, and things that also can harm someone else. And, you know, when we're dealing with safety issues and things like that, I reject that. I do not think that I need to be kind. That's not my first priority, is to be kind about this. This is a big enough issue to where we all should care a little bit less about our tone and care a little bit more about objective reality and what and how we're going to define the terms for, like, humanity and you know, the citizenry in our country.
This whole thing, it's like, you know, it's their right. It's their right. Look.
No, it's not. That's
no,
not
it's
a right.
Not. Sorry. This isn't a right. I am not advocating for a person not to be able to be employed or not to be housed or not to, you know, provide for their family or even choose how they, like, I'm not advocating for that. Like, you, but this isn't the same thing.
No.
It's just not.
Mm-mm.
So, end of story. We'll see how that happens. We'll right. see how it works out. But this is going, if you think that this is, it's going to be a bigger issue, especially, yes. And by the way, side note, McBride has very close ties to the Biden family. This individual, just like a side note, he was a graduate of American University, came out or whatever, I think in like 2012 or something like that, or maybe earlier, I can't remember the dates of it, was tapped by Beau Biden because, like, they were politically active, what had very close relationship with Joe Biden specifically, where he's, like, acknowledged McBride multiple times for their bravery and everything like that. And it was like the moment, I can't help but wonder, because they gained recognition and a lot of fame, frankly, when they transitioned during the peak time where all of this transition stuff was just starting to happen. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we're talking about the 20 teens, I think, like 2013, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, like, got catapulted into having articles about them. He's been in the New York Times. He's been in the Washington Post. They've been, like, there's been a lot of stories about him and in his story and how he's progressed and been an activist for LGBTQ plus, you know, organizations. There's a photo of him in 2016 taking a picture of himself. It's still on his ex in the women's bathroom with a caption of, like, I'm not supposed to be here or something like
that. Hey, I'm done. No, I'm done. Sorry.
So, the other thing is that this individual is an activist.
Yes.
So let's include that context too. It's not just like they have a mental health condition. They acknowledge that they have chosen to live their life this way. And now they want to go and live their life. No, this person is an activist that is actively working.
Well, and the game plan is to come in and disrupt. That has to be acknowledged.
So this isn't like,
no, it's
someone
not going away.
Going
it's not
about
going away.
Their business.
And this is never actually going to go away, because now this has become an option in our culture. But it will become bigger and bigger and bigger if we don't continue to squash it.
Yeah.
Squash the option that we all have to accept this new reality. We don't have to. We shouldn't. We shouldn't ask people to lie all the time, routinely, to make other people comfortable. That's an absurd proposition.
In anything. Yeah. In anything.
Right. Right.
In anything that is not is objectively false or against, like, reality.
Right.
Like, it's just not necessary.
Yeah.
So that was that. And now let's talk about, because stuff isn't exciting enough.
Yeah.
We have, what is the talking point right now is that reality TV has invaded, or is set to invade, the Trump cabinet. Like,
yep.
So most recently, the last three picks, let's say there's been four picks that are television adjacent. Mm-hmm. For the first one was Pete Hegseth, which has a whole bunch of drama surrounding him right now with allegations. Hegseth, he allegedly had accused of sexual assaulting a woman. Now, this information had never come to surface. There was like no news. There was no report. And when the police did investigate it, I got to remember the details. She was found to be the aggressor. And it seems like that possibly it was like a regret kind of situation. And that the big talking point is that Hegseth paid this woman off or had them sign like a, what is it? What do you call it?
Non-disclosure agreement.
Non-disclosure agreement. And so that's supposed to be evidence of like he did something wrong. People sign that stuff all the time. They make settlements all the time because the expense and being dragged through the mud is enough of a incentive for them to do this. And so that does not necessarily mean that he's guilty. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's innocent, but this has definitely been dug up. And so that's one of the things. And also reportedly the Trump transition team was not made aware of it because Hegseth did not inform them. But he says, I didn't inform you because I didn't think it was like a nothing kind of deal. So that's his argument.
Yeah.
So he's the first reality television person or TV adjacent individual because he was a weekend Fox News host.
Yeah, go back in our last couple podcasts.
Yeah,
and that we'll
is
tell you
his
how we
only
feel about
qualification.
That. Yeah.
And now the next one that just got announced, there's been three, was Sean Duffy for the Department of Transportation. So this is absolutely hilarious to me when I saw that Sean Duffy was nominated because as a young Gen Xer, I watched The Real World, like the original Real World on MTV out of New York. And then I watched it for multiple seasons, I think going into San Francisco and maybe Boston. And then it got stupid and I lost interest in it. And maybe I got older. I don't know. So Sean Duffy was in the Boston episode of The Real World, as well as his wife, Rachel Campos, who was in the San Francisco season.
I knew none of this because I didn't watch MTV. So I have no idea.
Immediately when I saw it, that was my first association. So anyone that is close to my age, you knew immediately, like, that is also going to be your association. Sean Duffy, like, the big talking point with him was that he was a lumberjack guy and he would do competitions. He was going to law school. Rachel Campos had a whole bunch of drama, like, she was dating Puck and stuff like that. Anyway, she's a Fox News, current Fox News host. And they are married with, like, nine children. And they met on...
Are you kidding?
No, I'm dead serious.
And he's the Department of Transportation. Okay, then he definitely is qualified. Because if you can manage that many children, getting them ever where they need to go, you can do anything. That's
I'm pretty
it.
Sure they have nine kids. It's like eight or nine. Like they
That's
have
a great pick.
Ridiculous great amount pick. Of children. Okay.
He definitely understands logistics, timing, getting people where they need to go. Definitely.
Well, and what's driving me crazy is that, of course, the talking point is like, of course, Trump, a reality television star from The Apprentice, is just choosing a bunch of reality TV people.
Eh, I don't
cabinet.
See it. I mean, he's worked on other committees. He has been, he represented Wisconsin for what, 8 years as a Republican? Like, it's not like he did this last year. He has an entire career. He has his JD. He served as district attorney in Wisconsin. So, yeah, he has chops. It's fine. This is not like it happened last season, you know?
I mean, that's the point. It's and all of the picks have that. Now, the other one, so that was Sean Duffy, which, by the way, if you guys want to get to know him better, go watch reruns of the Boston episode.
Well, I'm
going
to have to because I had no idea. I posted about him last night just to let people know, hey, they picked another cabinet. There's another cabinet pick, everybody. And I got this stream of messages like, no way. I watched, I don't know. What is going on? What are you guys talking about? And there he was when I went and Googled it. I was like, okay.
I was telling my husband, I was like, oh my, and he looked at me like I had grown an extra head. He's like, I never watched.
I did not either. So
and I was like,
it was lost on me.
Whatever. Well, and he met his wife on Real World Road Rules Challenge.
Didn't know that was a thing.
So that it was like when the different cast of Road Rules would then do like, they were like in a Winnebago.
It was like a crossover.
And do challenges.
Yeah.
And so that's where they met and fell in love and got married and now have nine kids.
And had like nine kids. And now he's a transportation secretary. Great.
Well, yeah. I mean, as long as he gets confirmed. But to say like he's absolutely not, that he's just some reality TV guy. First of all, that was the 90s. Yeah. Do you think that this man has done nothing since the 90s?
Of course they do. Of course liberals think that. Because that's all. They don't care about anything else. All they care about is spinning up the narrative. That's it. That's
well,
fine.
And then, of course, they're also bringing up that he is another talking head because he does come on Fox News periodically and, you know, pontificates, you know, as one
everybody in their party. Like, that is the worst of all of their talking points because it's like, oh, my gosh, that's the pot calling the kettle black. Like, come on. Come on. Like, lazy.
Yes.
Then now, but let's talk about Dr. Oz, though.
Okay.
Dr. Oz.
Do you have strong feelings about Dr. Oz?
No, I don't have strong feelings. I'm just like, really?
I think it's an odd choice. So Mehmet Oz, or Dr. Oz, as he is known for his talk show.
And he was on Oprah. I did know about him. Like, yeah. He was on Oprah pretty much all the time.
Hey, everyone. Quick note before we dive into this portion of today's episode. After recording, Rachel and I came across some additional information about Dr. Mehmet Oz that we were not aware of. And it is that back in 2010, his show featured a segment on transgender kids that seemed to defend and arguably promote the idea that a boy could be a girl. This is an important context considering today's episode, and we felt it necessary to acknowledge it. We'll be diving deeper into this subject or discussing it on Friday's episode. So just so you know that the discussion you're about to hear was recorded before we became aware of the segment. Right. So just wanted to mention that. Let's keep on with the show. So he has been chosen to lead up the center for why are these dogs being so loud? I think so. If you guys are hearing dogs in the background, it is currently raining inside, so I can't stick them outside. OK, so enjoy. OK. So Oz, he's going to head up the Center for Medicare and Medicaid. And a lot of people are like, oh, a pseudo doctor, you know.
No, he actually was a doctor.
Yeah. So just so you know, he is not just a doctor. He is a cardiothoracic.
Yeah. Thoracic. Yeah.
Yeah. Surgeon, as in like he, you know, does surgery in the heart.
Opens people up. Yeah.
And he was still working as a surgeon even when he was doing his show. He has an academic. He graduated from University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. He vice chaired the professor and was professor of surgery at Columbia University, you know, directed the Cardiovascular Institute at Columbia. Now, does that make him qualified to head up the bureaucracy of Medicare and Medicaid? I mean, I would think he would have some knowledge of Medicare and Medicaid just by being
in the medical industry.
Yeah. Yeah. So time will tell, but to just like dismissive as like another talk show host, I don't think is fair. That's the thing that's driving me nuts about this. It's like, you can maybe criticize, you know, if you're really going to be into it, you can maybe criticize the fact that they're not like bureaucrats that have like know the ins and outs of all bureaucracy.
Yeah, but Trump was never going to do that. He made that mistake in 2016.
I think that was,
and he said he wasn't going to make it again.
Point. Yeah. And actually what I did find interesting, which I did not like, by the way, is that apparently at some point he was basically advocating for Medicare for all.
Yeah.
Like he was pushing policies that are pretty close to what Harris was pushing in 2019.
Yeah. Don't love that.
Yeah. Very progressive, you know, getting everybody covered under Medicare and Medicaid.
No.
I don't know where
we're broke enough as it is.
Yeah,
that's just the worst.
I'm not as actually sure where he stands on that now. I don't know how him and Trump have discussed that issue. I do know that during Trump's previous administration, he was actively trying to eliminate or reform, however you want to put it, Obamacare. But I don't know where he is right now. Now, he does have some, what do you call it, controversies surrounding him, you know, specifically one of them being around COVID-19. And one of the things that people were upset about him was him suggesting reopening the schools. Well, we all know how that turned out.
Yeah.
He also promoted hydroxychloroquine as a treatment for COVID-19. There is debated evidence on that.
Mm-hmm.
But what it says to me is that he's not a dogma on these issues as long as he can get
to think openly about different things, willing to discuss other options and solutions.
And he'll be working
that doesn't bother me so much.
with RFK on this because of Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah.
Works adjacently with
HHS.
HHS. Thank you. I forgot that so many agencies, I forget. And then the last one that recently got nominated officially, I think it was like late last night.
It was because I was asleep.
Okay.
So it really didn't have to be late. It just had to be like post 8 p.m. when I turn off my phone. As I saw when I woke up this morning at 5:30.
Was Linda McMahon for the Department of Education. Now, Linda McMahon is also the co-chair of Trump's transition team, and she co-chairs it with Howard Lutnick, who just got nominated for Treasury, I think, or Commerce. I can't remember.
I don't know. I don't know.
I would have to double check, but it has to do something with money because he's like a money dude. Okay. Yep. So Linda McMahon, if her last name sounds familiar, it is because she is the wife of Vince McMahon of the World Wrestling Entertainment industry. Okay.
Love it.
So she co-founded with her husband the WWE, which was the WWF initially when we were kids.
Now that's
remember
what
that?
I watched when I every Saturday morning, man. My brother and I would get our
Are
bowl
you serious?
Of cereal. Yes, our oh bowl of cereal. And we would sit and we would watch The Undertaker, Hulk Hogan, The Bushwhackers. I loved that. And then as an adult, I remember having this conversation with our girls. It had to be a year ago or so. Trying to explain to them what WWF was. And they were so like confused. Like, what did you? I don't understand. Was it real? Was it fake? And so I was like, you know what? We're just turning it on. Yeah. We're going to turn it on right now. And you're going to watch it. And watching it like 35 years later is a world trip.
It's
so
ridiculous.
Definitely make some time in your schedule this week to do that. If you grew up like I did watching WWF. And then when it would end, my brother and I would set up like pillows and just
wrestle,
like jump off the couch, tackling each other. It was great. Good memories, truly.
Yeah. Well, I did not. I was not. It was
no, but
not
you
my
watched
thing.
Road Rules, Road. What
yeah,
was
but
it
I
called?
Was like
Real World.
Real World. I was in my teens. I was a teenager already by then.
WWF is my childhood. I love it.
Oh my gosh. So, well, to say that the criticisms about her is like, yeah, she's another TV person. Just so you guys understand, this woman was CEO of one of the largest entertainment brands in the world, which tanked for a while, and then she and her husband brought it back into relevance,
like for over two decades too she was in charge of this,
and took it public. That's the other thing. So, and then also during Trump's previous administration, she served as the administrator of small business, or head of the Small Business Administration. So she was part of a bureaucracy or an agency from 2017 to 2019, where she advocated for small business and entrepreneurship, because that's what she did, business and entrepreneurship. And during this entire time, or a good chunk of this, I'm not going to say the entire time, she has been involved in
like philanthropy.
Philanthropy in regards to education. So scholarships, literacy initiatives, STEM education programs, promoted workforce development programs to try and get from education straight to job market demands.
Yeah.
And not just, you know, highbrow, you know, studies of, I don't know what the heck they're teaching at Columbia University, but like practical jobs that can that can facilitate and serve the demand in our market.
Yeah.
And she is not a huge fan of the current education system. She is not.
That's good, because we need someone in there who's going to, you know, shake it up.
Yeah. So that is what she is going to be heading up. Now, if anybody thinks that, so the left is like, oh, this is another reality person, or this is another unqualified person, or they have no experience in, you know, government and stuff like that. That was, again, I believe that you are missing the point of why Trump was elected. I don't know. Maybe you can make the argument that there's people that didn't realize that he was to this point of wanting to dip. But I think everybody knew that he was offering different ideas. He's been very vocal about his position with the Department of Education. So much so that it's one of the talking points that you hear frequently from the left of panic that he wants to dismantle the Department of Education. It is in line with DOGE also. This is, so I don't think we can be surprised that he is tapping talent, or that is
going to look at the whole problem differently.
Completely new.
Yes. And honestly, like, I get that they keep trying to fearmonger and scare people by saying, look at all of these, you know, entertainment bros that he's bringing in. It's just going to be one big, you know, dude party, and none of them are serious. This is all silly, whatnot. But the point is that none of us know what's going to happen, honestly. I mean, okay, he could come in and bring in all these picks, and it could be, you know, a disaster, whatever. The point is, though, that he won resoundingly. Okay. I know some people don't want to admit it, but there was a mandate. He is the first Republican candidate to win the popular vote.
It's like Bush.
In 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay. People want something different because guess what? What we're doing right now, I think it's not working. It's not looking great. And if you want to talk about a department that has failed upward for the last 50 years, it's the Department of Education. By the metrics, it has only failed. It continues to bleed money. It spends and spends and spends. And its results are worse and worse and worse and worse. And that's just objective truth. Again, I know, listen to what we talked about at the top of the episode. Objective truth is hard for people. They don't want to admit it because then you have to have change. And I think that that's what Trump offers. And I think that's why people voted for him on a whole variety of issues. And so we have to be able to go, let's try something different. And it's not like he's just picking off someone from the local cafe and saying, would you like to now head up one of the largest departments in the administration? He's picking people who he's worked with, who he thinks will be effective, who might, you know, come at a challenge differently and provide unique solutions. Because like we said, what the bureaucrats are doing right now in all kinds of agencies is not, it's not producing good results. And Americans are fed up. So I say give them all a chance. Why not? There's one or two where I'm like, you know, but I think new is interesting. Aren't they always telling us to be diverse? Isn't that a whole thing? Like being diverse in our thoughts and
only
who we surround
only
ourselves
one way,
with?
You can only be diverse in certain ways. Okay. There's only certain acceptable ways for you to be diverse. Okay. Like, let's just be honest. So I don't know. I'm totally in agreement with you. Like some of them, if I were to provide a criticism, which frankly, I don't think Trump cares anymore, especially after what he's gone through for the last 8 to 10 years. You know, everybody's always like concerned about the optics of things and
how
things
look.
Because
optics matter.
And I think, and so it would it be easier on us as his voters and his supporters
to not have to defend every single movement he makes because it quote unquote looks bad to, but they're going to think anything looks bad. That's the whole point.
That's the point.
He could pick any person for any position and they will complain. Mm-hmm. There is not one nice thing they have to say about him, the people he surrounds himself with, his family, his policies. I swear the next 4 years we could have the most amazing economy and everything could go swimmingly and we could be the safest, most prosperous country in the world again. And they would still find something to complain about and say it was the worst 4 years of their life because they did that when he served the last time. And there were objectively to any person with an open mind, some great stuff that came out of that
administration.
Time.
Yeah.
And they just cannot admit it. They refuse. So whatever. I'm sorry.
At this
we can't make them happy. It does not matter.
I'm willing to try anything at this point, especially if it includes like, speaking of the Department of Education, here's like a little side note. So there is this video that's starting to go around because I go into the corners of TikTok, which is dark and horrible. Mm-hmm. And this woman, she's a mom and she's in her car and she's like, you know, they're talking about getting rid of the Department of Education. Well, let me explain to you why we need the Department of Education.
Oh, the biggest self-own of all time.
Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yes.
To the people who think abolishing the Department of Education is a good idea, I'm going to give you one example as to why it is not. Yesterday, I was at a soccer game and there were two high school girls behind me. High school. These girls are in high school. And one of them said, how many halves are there in this game? How many halves make a whole, sweetheart? How many halves make a hole?
Lady, you're proving our point.
The fact that these girls don't understand the concept of a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
is evidence that the Department of Education
has failed, has not has working. Failed. Oh, and there's many pieces of evidence. I think I'm going to do that on Instagram today. We're going to talk about the Department of Education. We're going to talk about education in our country. Get ready.
So I'm just like, whatever. And then
speaking of Linda, Linda might come in and just really mix it up. I'm interested.
The fact that she has managed or put up with, because Vince McMahon is no cupcake. Okay.
I feel like that was a tumultuous relationship, yeah, perhaps.
And let's just say that there's allegations surrounding
there's some
Vince
indiscretion.
McMahon. There's
there.
A lot of drama. Mm-hmm. Some people are saying that she covered up for her husband. I don't know. We have no idea. Maybe her husband was lying to her. Maybe she was turning a blind eye. Mm-hmm. Anybody ever heard of Hillary Clinton? Okay. Right. So problematic.
Well, and if we're going to talk about like sexual misconduct, and if they really want to major on that, which they're going hard at, like at Matt
Gaetz. You ever heard of a Kennedy?
And Pete Hegseth. Okay. They're really pushing these allegations, which maybe they're true. I don't know. That's not what I'm talking about right now. What I'm saying is you have to decide if you really want to go there, because we can find just as many allegations and indiscretions on that side of the party. And if we're going to then be able to talk about, and you're going to want to bring up the stuff with Matt Gaetz and the stuff with Pete Hegseth, which I think is important, then you need to allow Republicans to also bring it up. Like, oh, I don't know, when they were talking about Doug Emhoff, why couldn't we talk about that?
Yeah, slapping his
girlfriend. They shut that conversation down so fast when that would get brought up. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And like, let's not pretend like this kind of stuff only happens on the Republican side of the aisle. Like, it just, come on, let's be honest. It's a problem amongst all of them.
All right, those are going to be the talking points you're going to be hearing about Trump's cabinet picks. I'm sure they'll only go up from there. Mm-hmm. But just know that these are, like, they're not just, like, TV host, right? It's so frustrating. So last thing we want to talk about, because it'll be quick, I think, hopefully, we'll see if we can get ourselves together, is that the Lincoln Riley trial is going on currently. If you are not familiar, she was a nursing student in Athens, Georgia, went on a jog and was brutally raped and murdered by a Venezuelan illegal migrant.
Mm-hmm.
And he is currently facing trial. Now, he waived his right to a jury trial. So this is a bench trial. So mm-hmm. It's just him and the judge and the witnesses. So one of the things I wanted to mention, and that's why we wanted to bring it up, is, of course, make you aware that the trial is going on.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically, there was testimony, I believe, yesterday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
That the roommate of Lincoln Riley's killer, who I don't even know his name and I frankly don't care, testified during his trial that they were at the Roosevelt Hotel in New York together September of 2023 and received a taxpayer-funded flight to Georgia.
Someone else that you got to know that you live with while you were here in Athens.
Alguien más que llegaste a conocer, que vivió con ustedes aquí en Athens.
Giancarlo Hernández.
Giancarlo Hernández.
And how did you get to Athens?
¿Y cómo llegaron a Athens?
Por en Nueva York pedimos en Manhattan.
In New York, we asked in Manhattan.
En el Hotel Roosevelt.
And Hotel Roofing?
Roosevelt.
Roosevelt.
De Manhattan, pedimos un vuelo humanitario aquí hasta Atlanta.
In Manhattan, we requested for a humanitarian flight to come here to Atlanta.
And when was that?
¿Y cuándo fue eso?
Palo, como el de 9 a 10 de septiembre.
Around the 9th, 10th of September.
And where did you go when you arrived in Athens?
¿Y cuando llegó a Athens, a dónde fue?
Al aeropuerto Airport.
To the airport, Airport.
Al aeropuerto de Atlanta.
Airport.
Jackson Airport.
So, just so you know, and this man was already, he had a record from Venezuela. He was gang affiliated. But because Venezuela doesn't share this information with the United States.
Yeah, there's no way.
The
only country that doesn't share their information with the United States.
Correct. So there's no way to vet them.
People. Right.
I'm not 100% sure if he was flown into the United States from Venezuela, because that has also been happening, or if he just crossed over illegally. But he was in New York, got humanitarian aid, and was able to fly to Georgia. So
that's your money, your taxpayer money.
Exactly.
Funding that.
Which is then resulted in the death of Lincoln Riley, or contributed,
the brutal murder.
So that was like a really big revelation that I saw yesterday on my feed that I feel like is not being covered sufficiently by the news. And I think it's something that's really particularly important, considering with the new administration coming in and the fact that he is very open and is very supported in the policies of mass deportations, particularly when it comes to individuals who should have been deported already and are just hanging out in the United States because they got, you know, a hearing date or something like that.
Well,
or,
with God only knows what on their record that has not been disclosed to any U.S. official, because that doesn't have to be, which is never taken into consideration in the discussions about illegal immigration.
No, it's always just
the illegal immigrants. They're very painted sympathetically. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember to bring up this conversation, because it's very real when that kind of, again, manipulation is used to make people feel really bad for saying, no, I don't feel safe with thousands, hundreds of thousands of illegal migrants in our country who we know nothing about.
Well, and Tom Hooman has been very open. He's now going to be the incoming border czar. And he has said, look, my priority is to get rid of the people who are criminals who are in the United States illegally, which would have been this individual who murdered Lincoln Riley. Yet we have Democrat governors that are organizing and pushing
together
against any kind of cooperation with Tom Hooman or any plans for mass deportation, specifically claiming that we're not going to help anyone that is going to uproot. Or like, there was this whole, did you see Katie Hobbs of Arizona?
Yes.
Her like spiel of like how she's trying to defend this.
When hearing about the Trump administration's plans for border security, the emphasis really is on this mass deportation. What we saw here today is the actual work happening at our ports of entry that are interdicting drugs, keeping those drugs off our streets. And we need more of that to secure the border here.
As you know, Trump has promised that he would carry out mass deportations on day one of his presidency. Your state is estimated to have 250,000 undocumented immigrants. Some Democrats in your state, like Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallegos, say that she wouldn't allow police to be used to carry out this plan. Would you, as governor, allow state police and National Guard to carry out mass deportations?
We will not be participating in misguided efforts that harm our communities. And I've been incredibly clear about that.
So you disagree with mass deportations and the fact that the president-elect says that's what he's going to be working on day one?
Well, I think that those efforts are going to divert needed resources that we need here on these drug interdiction and smuggling and trafficking efforts to keep harm out of our communities. We need those resources here. And the coming here today and seeing this operation firsthand just underscores that working in partnership here is how we can best secure the border.
What would worry you the most, Governor, about mass deportations?
Well, I think the diversion of law enforcement from the work that they do every day to keep our communities safe. People hiding in fear. We saw that under previous state policies here, and it harms communities. It tears families apart, and we're not gonna That's not going to happen on my watch.
Well, they're not saying that they're not leaving it at we're not going to participate. They're saying we will actively disrupt. Like, this is not happening in our state. And I'm like, lady or men, all of you have no idea what you're talking about. And you don't understand how this works. And he's been asked on multiple occasions now.
Hooman?
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do with these governors, these state officials who are not going to cooperate? And he's like, okay, try it. Just try it. He's not afraid. He's not backing down.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to go down. But the thing is, what I find really interesting is that a lot of these Democrat governors who are in states that had a pretty significant shift to the right. Now, they didn't go red, but they shifted like nine.
Happening continue to happen and they'll be red. By the next election. Lots of these states, too, are being overrun with violence and people do not feel safe there anymore. They have people leaving the states, migrating out, that don't want to part in this anymore. It's like, open your eyes. Your constituents do not like it here. You are failing them. And so he comes along, and simply because he is associated and affiliated with Republicans, they're going to wholesale reject his suggestion to get rid of people with criminal records. Why are you not saying, absolutely, please take them out of my state? Deport them. What?
Well, it's just wild to me, as you know, we are now, 2 weeks out from the election? Is it 2 weeks? I have no idea.
Yeah, 2 weeks and a day.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to me that we are still seeing continued trends of like that not learning their lesson.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Keep going, though. Keep not learning that lesson.
Well, and then
you're
like
have a Republican recently, in the office forever. Then
they did a poll and they like selected Harris again. Like,
oh,
among Democrats, they selected Harris again as like the potential for the next.
Great. Great.
And I'm just like, please.
Yeah.
Please
do it. Run it. Runner.
No, because it's not just Katie Hobbs. You also have J.D. Pritzker. You have Jared Polis, who is Colorado. Pritzker is Illinois. Mm-hmm. They're creating this governor's safety guard of democracy group or whatever, where they're going to like protect blue state rights, specifically reproductive rights, but also illegal immigration. I'm like, hello.
Wow.
That is the reproductive rights issue, the air quote reproductive rights, which is abortion issue. Mm-hmm. People are now becoming more accepting. Like the general public, the populace is becoming more accepting that it is a state issue. And as long as they're in a state where they feel comfortable about the issue, it's not going to be a primary like voter
concern
issue
for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In midterms. And what you'll maybe end up with is maybe like a blue, you know, local government, which honestly, it should push us to become much more involved at our local government, but it's not going to have the effect that they're hoping for at the federal government level, which is really antithetical to the Democrat Party in general.
Right.
Was constantly
That's their
trying
major
to,
issue, their whole yeah. issue. They thought it was a winning issue, too.
Well, not just that, but they always want to run things from the top down.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the state issue thing is just kind of like a side annoyance.
Voters don't want that anymore.
No,
I don't
think it's going to work. So just wanted to give you an update on what was happening with the Lincoln Riley trial. And last thing, just to wrap it up, as I mentioned, Trump's sentencing has been adjourned in his like the 37 counts in New York. What that means, nobody freaking knows. Okay. So he was supposed to be sentenced. Judge Mershon had decided to adjourn that. He was literally supposed to sentence him on the 26th. And so now it's kind of like in a limbo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a pretty big limbo because technically, I'm not an attorney, but as far as I understand it, Trump cannot appeal until he's been sentenced. So
what that means?
I don't know what that means. I don't know. But the point is that Mershon is kicking the can. He doesn't want to sentence a president-elect. I don't know if this is going to show up 4 years from now. We'll see. And I think 4 years from now, it probably won't even be like as big of an issue and it may just become nothing.
Yeah.
So the whole talking point of like Trump could potentially be president from jail.
No.
Gone. No more. End of that. So just wanted to give you guys an update on that. And I think anything else? Are we all done? We're done for today.
We're good. We're good until the next shoe drops.
Yeah. So in the future, we have talked about, we've already had our discussions about what we're going to be doing as we move forward. As you can tell from today's episode, yes, we are still campaign games, but we are going to be slowly switching over to more general news and not just specific election news.
Yeah, we got some fun things coming down the pike for you guys.
Yeah. So we're not leaving.
We're only going to get better.
Exactly.
Maybe not more awake, but definitely more professional.
That's the goal. But that's a wrap for today's episode of Campaign Games. Thanks for hanging out with us. We talked about the drama on the Hill, the reality cabinet, and an update on Lincoln Riley. We're also fully aware that there is stuff blowing up with Ukraine currently. However, we're not geopolitical analysts. So we're going to be sharing more about that specifically on our stories and just sharing the news as we know it and probably giving some side commentary, especially Rachel. Rachel's really good at that. So in the meantime, make sure that you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. And since we are your new favorite podcast, you're going to give us a 5-star rating, a lovely comment, tag us in your socials, and we'll share it because sharing is caring.
We'll love you forever, please.
We love all of your sweet notes and the reviews.
They're super encouraging. And they also, when you guys give us feedback, we listen. And so
we do.
We appreciate it.
So that's it for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in to Campaign Games, the game of survival for both the candidates and the voters. We're out. Bye.
Bye.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.